In our last lecture, we talked about the boundaries in pastoral counseling. Now I'm going to refer to an article by Dr. Warren Hurd. This article was first printed in Christian Counseling Today many years ago. The title of the article is Wiseman, Pastor, Prophet, Priest, Tailoring Your Counseling Style. This article is going to help us understand that we approach different kinds of situations completely differently and give us more freedom to understand how that might work. So to do that, Dr. Hurd gives us some situations. What I'd like you to do is, wherever you are, to just have a piece of paper or your computer, and just I'm going to give you a multiple choice. This isn't really a test, but I'm going to give you a situation and four choices, and you just write down the one that you think might be best, and then we'll go back and talk about them. What would you do? You have been working with a teenager who has alcoholism problems. He has begun to miss appointments and has missed the last two consecutively. For today's appointment, he is half an hour late. What would you do? Here are your four choices. Confront him about his irresponsible appointment pattern. 2, suggest he begin to use an appointment book and show him some kinds of books that he might use. 3, verbalize your own frustration and empathize with his feelings. 4, ignore the missed appointments and ask where he wants to start today. Okay, you see your choices on the screen. Which one would you do? Here's the next one. A couple comes to you who fight a lot, and then they feel very guilty about it. They make up, but they seldom reach agreements when there is a conflict. Okay? Here's a couple. They fight a lot. They feel guilty, but they can't ever really make progress. What would you do? Choice number 1. Talk to them about their need to resolve conflicts as they arise, because unresolved conflicts can poison a marriage. 2, encourage them and use the session to teach conflict management skills. 3, empathize with each of them as they share their feelings of love on the one hand and frustration on the other, and then help them get in touch with and verbalize their true feelings. 4, try to just be an observer of their communication pattern and give them your analysis if they ask for it. Here's the next one. A physician has come to you after the death of her father. They were very close. She seems to be processing the grief rather well, but she still wants to talk to you and process some of her feelings. What would you do? A, give her a workbook on processing grief and ask her to do the first 2 chapters and then set up another appointment. 2, talk to her about the stages of grief and determine what stage she presently is experiencing and normalize her feelings. 3, listen to her and use empathy to help clarify her feelings. 4, just be there with her and follow her wherever she wants to go in the session. And there's one more. A successful lawyer has come to discuss a career change. He wants to become a marriage counselor in order to prevent divorce instead of helping to enact it. What would you do? First choice, point out that counselors have their frustrations too, and maybe he is idealizing the profession. 2, encourage him and work on setting up a plan for making his decision one way or the other. Encourage him and work on setting up a plan for making his decision. 3, empathize with his feelings. 4, be a sounding board as he thinks through this possible career change, providing insight and asking the appropriate questions. All right, what would you do? Well, before we look at the answers that Dr. Hurd suggests, let me have you look at the diagram that you will see on your screen. He suggests that when it comes to different styles needed for handling counseling issues, there's a chart, a grid, a vertical line and a horizontal line. The vertical line has high support at the top and low support for the counselee at the bottom. High support for the counselee, low support. On the vertical line in the middle, low structure, high structure. Low structure in the counseling, kind of a hands-off. High structure, very hands-on. Okay, so you see this grid. He says that the vertical structure or vertical line is sort of a love line, and the horizontal line is kind of a discipline line. Love, high support, low support. Discipline, low structure, high structure. Then he says that in each of those quadrants, there's a different kind of role. So starting in the lower right quadrant is telling. That's high structure, but low support. It's not very relational, but I'm going to tell you what you ought to do. High structure. That's telling. Above that is teaching or pastoring, shepherding. High structure and high support. Okay? Then as we move to the left, there is supporting. High support, low structure. I'm not going to tell you what to do, but I'm here for you, kind of thing. And the last quadrant at the bottom is consulting. Low support, low structure. I'm just here to give you some feedback. Okay? Now, he sees in these different pastoral-type roles. So the telling, he would say, that's like the prophet. I'm going to tell you what the story is here. Whether you like it or not, this is low support, high structure. I'm going to tell you what you ought to do or what you ought to think. He said, Jesus was like this sometimes. He was very direct. Then like when Jesus said to the Pharisees, you perverse generation. Okay, that's very, very high structure, low support. The second quadrant, which we call teaching, he would identify that with the pastoral role, sort of the gentle part. He looks at the story of the woman caught in adultery. And Jesus comes, I don't condemn you, go and sin no more. It's high structure, he's very involved, and high support. The next one over, he would liken to the priest. High support, but low structure, comes to serve. In that case, Dr. Hurd thought of the shortest verse in the Bible, John 11:35, Jesus wept, is identifying with the need, the heartache. And then finally, the consulting box in the lower left, he says that's akin to being a wise man, someone who is consulted, sort of like the writer of Proverbs, perhaps. And he looks at the way Jesus would use questions to get people to think things through. So these four quadrants, these four kinds or styles of counseling, when you hear them, you can sort of understand that different situations call for different things. I'd also suggest that probably you find one kind more natural to you than the others. How do we know which style to use? Well, if the problem is motivation, if that's the problem, then he says use the prophetic. If the person's unwilling to change, use the prophetic. Kind of point your finger, kind of get in their face. If the person wants to change but doesn't know how, that's the teaching pastoral role. They want to change, but they don't know how. If the person is motivated and competent but is just missing confidence, then that's the priestly role, the supportive role. And finally, when motivation, competence, and confidence are not the issue, but they just want some feedback, that's the wise man. So you see these four kinds of roles. Now, let's talk about those case studies he gave us. The teenager with alcohol problems who's missed two appointments and is half an hour late for the one that's that they're supposed to be coming to now. He says, that calls for a prophet. That calls for telling. Confront him about his irresponsible appointment pattern. What's going on here, pal? How come you were late again? Do you want to meet or don't you? Because we're not going to do this anymore where you make an appointment and don't come. So the second one, a couple comes to you who fight a lot, and then they feel very guilty about it. They make up, but they seldom reach agreements when there's a conflict. What would you do? Well, you might not be surprised to find out he suggests number two, which was encourage them and use the session to teach conflict management skills. Here's a couple who wants help. They're not fighting with you. They're not fighting counseling. They want help. They just don't know what to do. So now what's called for is training. And so you might walk them through a workbook or have them read or just work with them on how they handle conflict, try to address the different things that they do that aren't useful, and bring help to them. So you become the teacher in that situation. The third one is this physician who comes to you after the death of her father. They were very close. She seems to be processing the grief rather well, but she still wants to talk to you and process some of her feelings. That's not an uncommon thing for a pastor. Somebody just wants to come and talk. Well, he says, that's number three. Listen to her and use empathy to help clarify her feelings. She's not really asking you what to do. You're just helping her to be to handle her feelings in a healthy way. So that's the supporting role, the priestly role. I'm here to support you. You don't need my answers. And the fourth one, the successful lawyer who's thinking about a career change to be a marriage counselor, he says that's number four. Be a sounding board as he thinks through his possible career change, providing insight and asking appropriate questions. He's competent. He's confident. He's thinking well. You just want to give him some feedback, like, well, have you looked into schooling or what that would involve? Have you thought about what's expected emotionally from a marriage counselor? Maybe you could talk to a counselor and just see how that compares. This is really an advice thing, you know, just some wisdom. So that was the tailoring your counseling style.
Even a small contribution can make a big difference. Jesus fed 5,000 people because of a little boy's five loaves. Regardless of the amount, your contribution is very important and greatly appreciated. Visit us at tvsseminary.com.
Now, before we quit this particular lecture, I want to touch on one other thing. This is the subject of homework for counselees. This will depend, kinds of homework you can provide depends a lot on where you live and what's accessible to you. But let me give you some insights on this. One time I was visiting with a friend of mine who is a pastor, and he asked, do you give homework? And I said, no, not very often. He says, you don't give homework? How do you expect them to learn? So I started thinking about it a little more. I still don't do it all that often, but that might be my weakness and not a good idea. Let me give you a few axioms, rules. They're not directly about homework, but they kind of fit in this place. One axiom I've mentioned in passing: you cannot help anyone who doesn't want to be there. You can't help anyone who doesn't want to be there, who doesn't want to change. Now, sometimes people will send someone to you. I'm sending my husband to you. I told him if he doesn't come and see you, I'm leaving him. Oh, great. I'm sending my teenage kid to you. I hope you can knock some sense into their heads. Great. Now, maybe you can build a relationship with that person, but if they don't want to be there, you're not going to get very far. That's one rule. Another rule that we've alluded to in the past is people resist change, even change they want. We all resist change. So when you're asking somebody to think differently about a relationship or to behave differently in a situation, they may buy it, they may want to do it, it's still going to be very difficult. They're changing habits of thought and heart, so it's going to take a while. That's why homework helps, because you're reinforcing using other things than just the counseling session. And a third axiom is, if people are going to change, they're going to have to take little steps. They can't do this in one big step. The counselor is like a physical therapist. Have you ever had to have physical therapy? It's very slow. On this day, you just try to lift your arm a little more than yesterday, or lift a little more weight than you used to. Just a little at a time. It's very slow. Well, counseling is like that with some change. It's a little bit at a time. You can't just tell somebody what they ought to do and send them on their way. Well, what do you need to remember if you're going to give homework to someone? Well, first of all, you have to understand their capacity. You don't want to ask people to read a book if they've never read a book in the last 10 years. That's not going to happen. If they're not real good on a computer, you don't want them to ask, you want to tell them to go look up YouTube videos that might help them, because that'll just bewilder them. You have to know their capacity. If they're very thoughtful, well-read, very intelligent, you can give them harder assignments. If they're not used to that world, very basic, simple people, they have to be simpler. But here, let me give you some suggestions. First, one use of assignments is to sort of screen people. I noticed that I'd have people come, and they'd like to come back, because who else listens to them like I do, right? They love coming back. But I thought, I don't think anything's happening. I don't think anything's changing. So I would use an assignment as a little test. I'd give the simplest assignment. I might say, I want you to write out two Bible verses, or put this verse in your own words, as simple as I can think of. And I say, when you have done that, call me and we'll make our next appointment. And you know they almost never call, because they're not motivated enough even to do the simplest little thing. Now, if I think we have got to meet, then I'll take the initiative. I don't want to keep somebody away. I'll take the initiative if they need to meet. But when I think somebody is just kind of using the time, then I don't play along with that. If you believe the counselee really wants to do the homework, but you're not sure they have the self-discipline to do it, maybe they're not used to assignments anymore in their life, then you kind of have to help them. You may have to call them and say, how's it going? Or I'm going to check in with you. Or my little joke about I'm going to charge you $10 if you don't have this done. You can send an email. I'm checking. I promised I would check on you. And you say, this has to be done by our next appointment. I find it's often useful to say, call me when it's done, rather than making the appointment before they leave. And if you feel it's real important, you call them. Hi, Mary, do you have that assignment done yet? I've been thinking about you. I really want us to get together. Now, there's different kinds of homework that you can use. There's things they can read on the subject. And we can provide a bibliography for you, but it kind of depends on where you live and what books you have available. The book by Gary Collins that we've alluded to, Christian Counseling, has chapters on all kinds of counseling issues, and you can read what he suggests. And you might be able to draw from that things that they can read. Maybe they can even read the chapter. There's things on the Internet. There are blogs and articles they can read. You can have them do a Bible study on the subject at hand. You just have to think about it. What would be a good passage? Give simple questions that they could answer that gets to the point you want to make. You can have them pray along particular guidelines. I want you to pray this way every day for this situation. There's what we call process-related homework. This helps a counselee develop a process of how they do things between sessions. So you might ask them, keep a journal and write down every time this situation happens. And what did you do? That's a process. I'm trying to get better, and I want to keep a record of my process. You might give people some exercises to do that you have found, some things to help them think, to write, to explore their feelings. And finally, there's practice-related homework. Practice-related homework is where you say, all right, every day you're going to do something to help you get better. So every day you're going to compliment your children because you've been unkind to them.